Welcome to WISA Weekend, your weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. On today's program, we'll hear from both Dayton Mayor Nan Whaley and former director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, Richard Cordray. On Friday, Whaley stepped out of the Ohio governor's race and is now supporting Cordray in his bid. And later in the program, we'll talk to an official at the Dayton VA in light of President Donald Trump's executive action extending mental health coverage for new military veterans. Up first, on Dayton Youth Radio, we have the first of two stories about teenagers dealing with the opioid crisis. Today, we'll hear from Megan Johnson, a senior at Centerville High School.
My story is about my 25-year-old cousin, her life getting taken by the use of heroin. She overdosed on fentanyl. I did this story because this is something that I think about on a daily basis, every night before I go to sleep, losing someone who's so close to me to drugs and seeing what it did to my family. When I think of a heroin addict, I envision a dirty, homeless person, blitzed out, standing in an alleyway, not someone I know. Ashley was beautiful. She was very pretty, a little bit chubby, which always made her self-conscious. She was an only child. Ashley grew up in Springboro in a beautiful home with doting parents. Our moms took us to Kings Island and we had sleepovers, Thanksgiving and Christmases together. Everything. Ashley's story is like so many others. She could be a bit of a rebel. She liked bad boys. Her boyfriend was very into drugs, and soon Ashley was too. The next few teenage years were a bit messy. She decided to get a job and went to a small college. Then she had a baby. She moved in with her parents, living in the nanny suite downstairs in their basement. She finally decided to get clean and went to rehab. She was in and out of rehab a couple times, but the last time seemed good. The last time I heard from Ashley was Wednesday, June 23rd. She sent me a selfie of herself holding a new dog, a little baby dachshund named Lucy. Ashley was back. She looked happy. On Thursday, June 24th, it all came to an end. Ashley died. She overdosed on fentanyl. I had a nail appointment on Thursday in the evening with some of my girlfriends. My cell phone rang and I picked it up. It was my mom. She couldn't talk. She was crying so hard. She said, "I need you to come meet me at Aunt Becky's house right now." When I pulled into the driveway, the police and coroner were there. They were all outside, my mom, my sister, my aunt, my uncle, my grandpa, and my other cousins. We hugged and cried. There was nothing any of us could do. The next few days were a blur. I was afraid to fall asleep. I couldn't eat. I couldn't be around my friends. It was just too hard. The visitation and the funeral were on the same day. There was a long line for condolences. It took hours. The funeral was sad. Ashley's 5-year-old daughter kept telling everyone to touch her mom's hair because it was so beautiful. She put a pink, yellow, and blue string bracelet on her mom's wrist before closing the casket. I just wanted my message just to be that, you know, drugs, it's just a really bad thing to get into, especially since, I mean, just one person could be doing it and it affects a ton of other people. My story ends with losing my cousin and my family not being the same. Family is really important and the gatherings are important and that doesn't happen anymore. For Dayton Youth Radio at Centerville High School, this is Megan Johnson.
Something changed inside me, broke wide open, all spilled out, till I had no doubt that something changed.
That was a story entitled Something's Changed, written and produced by Megan Johnson, a senior at Centerville High School. Special thanks to Trisha Ray Pock. To hear more stories from this series, visit WYSO.org and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Project Coordinator has seen blood.
Support for Dayton Youth Radio comes from the Virginia W. Kettering Foundation and the Ohio Arts Council.
Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. Leave it like a skin upon the ground. Something changed inside me, broke wide open, all spilled out. Till I had no doubt that something changed.
I'm Jerry Kenney. This is Why So Weekend. On Friday, Dayton Mayor Nan Whaley stepped out of the race for Ohio governor before a large crowd at the Dayton Public Library downtown. The mayor thanked those who had supported her campaign over the last 8 months. Whaley also threw her support behind Richard Cordray, who joined the mayor at the morning press conference. The former Consumer Financial Protection Bureau director praised Whaley for her decision to support his campaign. Here's the full audio of their address at the Dayton Library.
Good morning. Thank you all for being here today in this gorgeous new Dayton Metro Library. Where's Tim Kambich? Thank you, Tim, for being our host today. In May of last year, I announced that I was throwing my hat into the race for Ohio's next governor. Over the past 8 months, I have traveled across this state talking to thousands of honest, hardworking Ohioans about our future and about issues that matter. I learned very quickly that many of the concerns and challenges we face here in Dayton are being confronted every day in every community across our state. As mayor of Dayton, I have seen firsthand the way the Statehouse crowd in Columbus has turned its back on our local communities. Instead of helping to provide the resources to fund vital community services and infrastructure projects, they were cutting our resources so that they could hand out tax cuts to their billionaire buddies. Instead of addressing the opioid crisis, they were playing politics with women's health and kicking voters off the rolls. Everywhere I have gone, I have declared the need to rebuild a partnership in Columbus with our local communities. We need a partner in Columbus that will fight for good-paying, career-building jobs, a partner who believes in the dignity of work and the power of education, a partner who will hold the big drug companies accountable for the mess they created. The response to our message has been overwhelming. So many wonderful people have encouraged me and inspired me to fight for the issues that matter to them, to fight for those who feel like they've been forgotten, to fight for those who've been ignored for way too long. And I will fight, but not as your governor. This morning, I am withdrawing from the race for governor and ending my campaign. I am incredibly thankful and very humbled by the experience of the past 8 months. I am proud of the campaign we have run. My team and I, in many ways, defined this race over the past year, elevating issues that otherwise wouldn't have even been discussed. We put together a bold initiative campaign, and I am so grateful for the support I received from Dayton and all across the state. I got into this race because I wanted to make a difference. I believe we have made a difference. Now is the time to bring our party together. Now is the time for unity. Now is the time for Democrats to join forces behind a candidate who will lead us to victory in November. I believe that candidate is Richard Cordray. So this morning, yes. Woo! So this morning I'm excited to announce that I am endorsing and throwing my support to Rich Cordray to be the next governor of this great state. Now many of you know Rich. He is a dedicated public servant with a distinguished record of service to our state and our nation. As a former legislator, a county official, a statewide office holder, and executive, he has the skills we need to move Ohio forward. Rich is smart, as we all know. He is talented, and he believes in the future of Ohio. He believes in the issues that I really care about, and he is ready to fight for those everyday Ohioans who have felt forgotten and ignored. He fought for Ohioans as our Attorney General, and he fought for all Americans as the director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. I know he will make us proud as governor. When he left the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau in Washington, Rich had a number of opportunities he could have chosen to follow. But he chose to come back to Ohio to continue to work for the people of Ohio. I respect that. I appreciate that. And I look forward to working with Rich to build a bright future for every single Ohioan. My friends, please join me in welcoming to Dayton the next governor of the state of Ohio, Richard Cordray.
Go on as long as you would like. Now, I'm thinking as I came here today, there were many years in politics and government in Ohio where I would get up in the morning and over the course of a day make 4, 6, 8 speeches. I know Nan does the same. In her case, maybe it's 8, 10, 12 speeches with never a note or maybe scratching something out on the way to the event. When I went to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and entered the world of Washington, D.C., it's a wonderful, wacky world of D.C. financial regulation. Things were very different. Everything was scripted. Everything had to be vetted by dozens of hands. When it was all written out, you had to deliver it to the T just as it was written, or markets might move, or God forbid, somebody might be surprised. And I'm glad to be back with the shackles off, able to just talk as I please, but not today. I actually have a written statement today because last night I wanted to write out exactly my thoughts about this occasion and about your mayor, Nan Whaley, and so I did that. And so I'm gonna kind of read here, and I just want you to understand it's not because I'm reading something that someone else wrote. It's what I wrote last night about 1 in the morning. Nan and I were joking about our last-minute speech-writing habits, and I want to give it to you just the way I prepared it. So first, I want to say I'm honored to be invited today to my mom's hometown of Dayton, Ohio, to join my friend Nan Whaley on this occasion. It is not an easy thing to reassess plans that have been pursued over many months of the most strenuous effort. And in Nan's case, I know her efforts are always strenuous. She pushes and lives it to the hilt. And it is not an easy thing to change course based on judgments that involve many other people and not only oneself. It takes wisdom and it takes resolve to make the decision that Nan has made today. Over the course of this year, this past year in particular, I've come to know and admire Nan more than I ever had before. When she came to Washington to meet with her fellow mayors a year ago, she also made it a point to meet with me. We discussed the work she's been doing as the mayor of Dayton and her potential plans. I was in no position to be very helpful about my future, as I was under the disability of the Hatch Act that prohibited any political action while I served as the director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. So all I could really tell her about my plans was that I did not know and could not say even if I did know. Nan was gracious and understanding about my awkward situation, and she went away probably not at all enlightened. But I was impressed from our conversation that this woman I had first known as a very young Democrat had clearly become an accomplished public official. Nan is a special leader with an appeal that is immediately apparent to the people who meet her. She's open and unpretentious, and she sizes things up quickly and bluntly. She makes no bones about her progressive principles, but she also recognizes the need for practical responses to the challenges people face. She has the can-do spirit so natural to the best mayors I have known, and she works so hard that she just can't help but get things done. In the race for governor, Nan's ideas have changed the nature of the debate. Her proposal for universal pre-K education, her focus on the opioid crisis, now it's gone largely unaddressed by the state government, and her insistence that we must expand access to education and job training to close the skills gap and secure a better future for Ohioans. On all of these issues, she has been right, and she has envisioned a practical yet beneficial direction for our future. Betty Sutton and I will fight for the same things Nan is fighting for, and I know she will be right alongside us. I know this because she cares too deeply to stand off to the side. In fact, one thing I know beyond a shadow of a doubt is that Nan will never shy away from a righteous fight, and she will never stand off to the side where people's hopes and dreams are at stake. Today, I'm proud and grateful that Nan Whaley has chosen to offer her endorsement of the Cordray Sutton ticket. What she has said to me is we simply have to win this year. No pressure there, certainly. I also know that she keeps a close eye on her friend and mentor, Senator Sherrod Brown, and the success of his reelection efforts, and we've had interesting news on that race over the past few days. Indeed, she has assured me that she'll be just as busy as ever, and we are counting on her to do that. Wherever she goes, she will carry our banner high. And I will rely on her political judgment as we navigate a tough primary campaign and perhaps an even tougher general election campaign. What Nan is doing today is a high-minded and generous act. Under the extreme pressures that we all face in politics, we do not always find a way to manage that. These things are hard, and none of us is perfect. But all of us can admire a person who sets an example like Nan is doing today. Before I close, I want to add one more thing about the leader Nan Whaley has become. All around the state today, we can see the destructive effects of what I call the war on local governments that our state legislature has been waging for many years now. It does not respect those on the front lines. It robs them of the resources and support they need just to do their jobs. And it is hurting our people and our communities. The one person who has done the most out of anyone in Ohio to fight back in recent years has been Nan Whaley. She reached out to create the Ohio Mayors Alliance, a bipartisan coalition of city leaders who are concerned about how the state government has worked against them rather than with them. The people of Ohio deserve much better, and she has pointed the way that we all should follow, listening rather than telling, helping rather than hurting. So Nan, while I thank you today, I also salute you. And I welcome all of the fine public officials in this room, and there are many, to join our cause. I have worked with many of you over the years to save people's homes and to address other pressing needs. We will now set out this year to earn our opportunity to join hands once again. The challenges are great, but we will tackle them with zest and resolution. And above all, we will tackle them together, for we know as a matter of plain common sense that by working with one another, we will always achieve more and better things than by working alone. So to you, Mayor Whaley, I finally have only three last words that I know you like to hear. Let's get busy.
I'm Jerry Kenney. You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. Thanks for joining us. President Donald Trump Tuesday signed an executive order that would extend mental health care to service members transitioning out of the military and back into civilian life. We spoke to officials at the Dayton VA Medical Center who say transitioning from the military can be difficult even under the best of circumstances. In this interview, Dayton VA Suicide Prevention Coordinator Karen Wolf says adding mental health issues into the mix can be dangerous.
So the Veterans Crisis Line is a national hotline, so anyone can call into it at any point in time. They will handle those immediate crisis situations. And when those immediate crisis situations are taken care of, they send down to the local facilities closest to where those veterans and those family members are at. a consult for the Suicide Prevention Program to receive and then connect those veterans to services that they need for that crisis situation. In 2017, we did over 600 consults from the Veterans Crisis Line here in Dayton alone in the 17 and a half counties that we serve.
600, that's quite an impact that you're having locally. Tell me a little bit about some of the issues that military members go through when they're transitioning into civilian life and some of the mental health aspects of the current crisis, really.
Sometimes when someone's transitioning, we know that transitions are hard for anyone when you're going through a transition. When we look at a lifestyle transition, and when I'm talking about a lifestyle transition, I'm talking about anything that changes your relationship, your financial stability, your careers, your health, the worth that you see and the value that you see within yourself that you're giving to the family and communities. Those are what we call lifestyle changes, okay? So when our military members are transitioning into civilian life, they have a lot of those lifestyle transitions that they're going through all at once, on top of some of the things that they've had to deal with when they were in the military and the connectedness that they had maybe going to a base every day, and now they don't have those connections anymore and people are further away and you can't really reach out to them very easily.
Are you seeing greater numbers from year to year in service members who are seeking help?
Yes, yes. We are having an increase in our mental health service requests, and we are reaching out to veterans that maybe in the past we would not have gotten them to call us. So, yes, that has been something that has been an increase in that.
Military service can be tough, so I don't see where, you know, people coming out with mental health issues how those numbers might be able to go down.
What we know is that we have 20 veterans that lose the battle to suicide every day, and we have 14 of those veterans that are in the community who haven't really reached out to the VA or haven't been linked into the VA system. And so part of it's looking at how can we partner with the community so that the community knows what services the VA can offer. And then what services does the community offer that the VA doesn't know? So it's a big, this year being the top clinical priority for the Secretary, suicide prevention is really big on looking at, you know, how can we partner with the community? How can we build these partnerships? How can we learn from each other? And how can we share in everything that we do so that we can meet the needs of the veterans no matter where they're at in our own communities?
What else can you tell us about the service that you're providing here to military members? What should our listeners know about this situation?
Well, we here in the Dayton VA and suicide prevention, we work very closely with everyone across our campus, all of our employees, to know what to do if somebody comes in and they might just need to talk to someone, or whether it's a true crisis where they're thinking about hurting themselves. We do a lot of training to make sure that staff are very knowledgeable of what to do in those situations. We also work with our community partners. You know, we're always doing outreaches in the community. Our program is one of the programs that have the highest number of outreach requirements in the VA. And so we're reaching out to mental health services in the community. We're reaching out to ERs. We're reaching out to the Adamus boards. Part of that reaching out to them is also partnering with trainings that we can do within their own communities. It could be attending an event and just talking about the Veterans Crisis Line. They could talk about what we're doing here in the Dayton VA, how to get connected to the Dayton VA. So there's an array of services that we provide to our communities. On top of, if somebody calls us up just because they found our phone number and they have some questions, we're working with those family members and those veterans that aren't really coming through a crisis line or anywhere else. We're just working with them as whoever calls us. We also have the veterans that are determined to be high risk for suicide. And we monitor them for 3 months or 90 days. We want to make sure that, you know, they've gotten through that crisis situation and that they're at a stable place. And so if they miss an appointment, we're going to be reaching out to those veterans and those family members, making sure that those veterans are safe and making sure we get them connected to the services that they need if they've stopped coming into care and that kind of stuff.
The Department of Defense stated that roughly 60% of military personnel don't qualify for enrollment in health care in the year following their military service. I think I and maybe some other listeners assume that once you're a veteran, you could always receive some sort of health care from the federal government for your service. Can you explain that in better detail?
Well, and our eligibility process is something that I'm not 100% on, and that wouldn't be where I could give you a lot of information on it. What I can say is that depending on how someone is discharged from the military and depending on their financial situation and their other resources that they have, that it all plays into it. And usually I have to contact our eligibility department to figure out that because I that's just not my expertise. I do have a phone number here if you would like to get more information on that, on eligibility for whether you qualify for services or not. Right. And that's the local numbers 937-268-6511, and eligibility extension is 2035. So if anyone has any questions about eligibility, that's the number that they would want to call to check in to see what's going on with their eligibility.
Karen Wolf is the Suicide Prevention Coordinator with the Dayton VA Medical Center. Karen, thanks so much for your time, and thanks for the information today.
Thank you so much for having me. What I want to give everybody is a last information about the Veterans Crisis Line, and that Veterans Crisis Line number is 1-800-273-8255, and at the prompt, press 1 for the Veterans Crisis Line. And we will have someone there 24/7, 7 days a week, 365 days to help people. So we are here to help veterans, and we just want to make sure that they know that we want to work with them and walk down that path of recovery with them. So if they want to reach out to us, we're here.
Great, Karen. We'll make sure that we put that information on our website as well.
Okay, that would be great. Thank you.
Well, great. Thanks again.
All right.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the third week of deep winter. The first full week of the frolicking fox moon and the first days of the sun in Aquarius. The frolicking fox moon is new today, and it waxes crescent throughout the coming week, entering its second quarter next Tuesday. This is the moon that carries the northern hemisphere tantalizingly close to the first days of early spring. This moon bodes well for the seeding of bedding plants and for the earliest tomatoes under lights. It is a pruning moon that encourages making way for new growth. It's a moon that invites me out into the land to try to find the first pieces of spring. And leaving deep winter's constellation of Capricorn behind, the sun moves higher in the daytime sky, entering Aquarius on the 20th. Its motion, like that of the moon, a gauge of the days with which to measure the limits of even the deepest snow. Little by little, the day's length is approaching a spring-like 10 hours along the 40th parallel, and despite the fact that average temperatures are, statistically, the lowest of the year, the third week of January often brings a prophetic thaw. Crows now become more boisterous under the swelling moon. Their migration typically starts this week. Sparrows and starlings court and build nests from now well into the summer. Overwintering robins become more active in the daytime. Opossums and raccoons and frolicking foxes become more active at night. These events and many more subtly transform the feel of the world, alter our sense of air and habitat in which we spend our days. The mind-body of creatures knows and understands this. even without the markers that might be obvious to humans, even without the calendar, the duration of the cold and darkness itself nurtures anticipation and restlessness. The time of winter, often seeming unbearably cruel and long, feeds hope and memory and longing that spread the vague but earnest and exciting message. Something new is coming. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the first full week of late winter. In the meantime, listen for the message.
Poor Will's Almanac for 2018 is available from Amazon. And you can purchase my book, Home is the Prime Meridian, Essays on Time and Place and Spirit, from the same site. The collection contains a number of the selections heard on this radio segment.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WYSO.org.
And that wraps up this edition of WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world. I'm Jerry Kenny. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 10. Coming up next on WYSO, it's Vic McCunis with the Book Nook.